My name is Tom Pobrezny, President of VA and Chairman of AirVenture Oshkosh, and I'd like to welcome you here today to our panel on the user fee issue. What I'd like to do is take a brief moment to introduce the members of the panel. On my immediate left is Jack Pelton, Chairman and CEO of Cessna Aircraft. Next, Ed Bowen, President and CEO of the National Business Aviation Association. Next to Ed is Phil Blair, President of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Alan Klatmeyer, President and CEO of Cirrus Design. And Pete Bunce, President and CEO of General Aviation Manufacturers Association. Each of these gentlemen will speak, along with myself, on behalf of the general aviation community. And I think I'd like to start off with a key point, and that is to establish the ground rules for what we define as general aviation, because I think that definition will become under attack as we address user fees. General aviation ranges from ultralights and light aircraft, sport aircraft, home-builds, single-engine, piston, to business aircraft. All are included under the definition of general aviation. Today we're here to talk about user fees, not a new subject, but there are some new parameters that we'll share with you, and to establish in the minds of our members of the aviation community the fact that we are united in opposition to user fees. We want to establish a solid message starting now. Is there immediacy to develop our position? There is one in terms of the fact of understanding the issue, understanding why this situation is different than in the past, and understanding that it's not immediate, but will be coming up as a major, major issue in 2007. In March of 2006, lobbyists for the airlines, and you heard the word airlines quite a bit today, introduced the Smart Skies. They, in turn, want to relieve themselves of financial burden and place it on the general aviation community in the form of user fees, primarily aimed at the business aircraft community. They've indicated to us, don't worry if you're a single-engine aircraft operator, a piston operator, that you're not going to be attacked or addressed. But we don't believe that to be the case, and that will be addressed further in this presentation. The trust fund system is important to maintain. The manner in which fees are collected today, and I'll use fees in quotes, to the fuel tax, works effectively and efficiently and allows general aviation to pay their fair share for the system that we utilize on a daily basis. General aviation feels that the proposals from the airlines will not apportion the costs and the fees appropriately, will make it unfair to the general aviation community in terms of usage versus the requirements of the airlines. We continue to support, and I emphasize strongly, continue to support the fuel tax method of collecting fees for the general aviation community to ensure that our system is the best possible. We don't believe that Smart Skies provides a fair shake to general aviation. I've talked about the airlines, and they right now become our strongest adversary. They are publicly committed to shift the cost of burden financially, but try to obtain more control of the system. This will not work in favor of general aviation. Today, through the efforts of this panel and what we're going to present to you, I want to give you paint the picture of general aviation's position as it relates to user fees that we utilize going forward as we address this issue and it comes to a head in Congress in the year 2007. To start the discussion, I'd like to introduce and have come to the podium Jack Pelton, CEO of Cessna, to discuss the business perspective on this airline initiative. Jack.
Well, good morning, and I really appreciate all of you showing up, because one thing as an industry that we have found is that our biggest advocacy and our ability to really make important change is really grassroots, and with all of your participation and taking the time to understand the facts and issues, it's critically important, because you are the largest advocates that we have, and you're the ones who in fact can make a difference. Tom asked me to talk about the concerns from a business perspective as to why the airlines are attacking general aviation, and I think there's a couple of key issues that have occurred, some changes in dynamics that have happened in the last 5 years. Most recently, there was a study that was performed, and it showed that people were moving away from paying premiums to airlines for air travel and, in fact, moving towards general aviation. And the airlines keep asking themselves as to why. Well, I think the reasons for that are quite obvious. their service is terrible. They're charging for everything from meals to services on the airplane. The ability to get to where you need to go is becoming less and less. And in fact, in their mind, and I think it is a reality, that GA does become a threat in order for people to have the transportation needs that they desire. So in that context, there is a threat in the airline's mind from GA. What's very, very concerning is that at the same time, their business is up, their load factors are up, and they are, in fact, moving toward profitability. And I think the issue that we need to be very, very careful of is not letting the airlines really fool the paying passengers. They're shifting costs to the passenger. Their entire motivation with user fees is to step up and move their inability to run their businesses as we have to in general aviation profitably and effectively, and shift that entire cost to the passengers. Probably one of the most discouraging that we have seen recently was with the pension fund. That has been, they've walked away from their obligations of underfunded pension funds and passed that on to all of us as taxpayers, which I don't view as being a responsible business. They also are looking at the upcoming FAA reauthorization bill as a window of opportunity, and that window of opportunity again gets back to cost shifting, not cost sharing, and also not being responsible with dealing with their own businesses. The reauthorization bill that comes up next year allows them to try to put more and more of that burden onto general aviation. I think if you look at the airlines of recent, the hub and spoke system that they've operated is really where the fundamental costs are in the system, and that's not for GA. If you look at GA, we're typically using the outlying airports that are not part of the hub and spoke system. At the same time, in their continued argument and debate to find ways to put blame on GA or to put the cost over to GA, they talk about the very light jets. Now, the very light jet phenomenon that's come on recently, whether you believe the forecasts that are going to occur for very light jets is really irrelevant. The real issue is where do very light jets operate? And very light jets are intended to relieve the congestion from the existing 35 hub airports and to move air transportation into the more remote fields that really relieve the burden from the airlines who are operating out of those hub airports. And while we're optimistic and hoping that the very light jet business does take off and boom, we really do not feel that the very light jet business is going to impose additional cost or burden on the system, and most importantly, not on the airlines. But again, this is some of the rhetoric that they're trying to push towards general aviation. I think the last point that I think is one that is coming to a real reality that we need to face, and that is that the airlines are pushing the FAA to fund airport infrastructure to support the A380. The A380, as you know, is the new large Airbus product, and there's going to be a funding requirement within the domestic United States of well over $1 billion to build the infrastructure at key hub airports to support that new product. Somebody has to pay for that, and it certainly should not be the burden of general aviation to support what, again, is solely an airline concern and issue. And again, they're shifting cost and they're shifting blame. So with that, Tom, I'll pass it back to you.
Next, I'd like to call Ed Bowen, President and CEO of National Business Aviation Association, to highlight why the debate is different this time than in years past. Ed?
Well, thank you, Tom, and thanks to everyone for being here. I know you all have a busy week, and certainly no one is busier than Tom, but he felt that this was a primary issue, and we certainly all feel that this is one of the greatest challenges our industry has faced. And we felt it really important for the entire spectrum of general aviation to be here talking about this very serious, very immediate threat. You know, the idea of user fees has been percolating in Washington for quite some time now, but it really hit a major milestone in March. In March, the airlines called a press conference at their lobby headquarters on Pennsylvania Avenue, three blocks from the White House. And they announced what Tom has already mentioned, which is their Smart Skies Initiative, what they call their blueprint for modernization. And when they rolled out their blueprint, it had 10 key principles to it. Now, when you read those principles, they were all kind of vague, a little opaque. There were some inherent contradictions, but it was clear that at the heart of those 10 principles was two very clear themes. The airlines in the United States have as their proposal for modernization that they want to pay less and they want to control more. They want to pay less by shifting from our current tax system to a user fee system that treats all airplanes the same, regardless of their size. According to the airline spokesman, a blip is a blip. All airplanes should pay the same, whether there are 3, 30, or 300 passengers on board. According to the airlines, an airline ought to pay the same, whether it's an A380 with 555 passengers or a Malibu Meridian. To them, it's all a piece of metal flying through the sky. Now, of course, the fault in that premise is that, as Jack said, it's the airlines that drive the cost of the system with their hub-and-spoke operating model. When one airline decides to put 50 airplanes into a single airport in a 15-minute window, that was a fact that was established by the General Accounting Office, by the Department of Transportation. It's something that the low-cost airlines themselves talked about the last time around. But it is clear that what they want to do is shift. And according to the airlines, they put the figure at $2 billion. They want to shift $2 billion from the airlines and on to general aviation. They also made it clear that they want to control the system. The press releases from that day talked about getting Congress and contractors out of the way, that they, the airlines, know best about how to run the system. Now, if you agree that the ability to impose mandatory charges on a community is the ability to tax them out of the system, you understand how serious this threat is from the airlines. They want a rate board controlled by the airlines, charging fees on everyone at the same rate, regardless of the size. Now, if we've gone around and talked to people about this issue, I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, you know, I'm hearing user fees again. Heard it before. I remember 10 years ago there was a big user fee debate. And you know what? Didn't really do anything, and it all worked out just fine. So my plan this time around is not to do much. It is fundamentally different this time around. The last time there was a user fee debate, you had six major airlines, what we now call legacy airlines, who decided that Southwest Airlines needed to be put out of business. They viewed Southwest as a threat and decided they needed to find some way to hinder their competitor. And what they did was kind of ingenious. They said, you know, we're paying this ticket tax, and it's based on the price of a ticket. The major airlines were then charging around $300 or $400 per ticket. There was a 10% ticket tax. And so they were paying their customers $30 or $40 per tax. Meanwhile, Southwest Airlines was flying around the country for $39. And they said, that's not fair. The Southwest passenger is only paying $3.90. And so their plan back then was very simple. Let's have one flat fee per passenger, call it $25 or $30, and what we'll do then is we'll hit the Southwest customer, and they're not flying anywhere for $39 now. They're going to be flying for $69. We'll double their cost. That will hurt them. We'll put the money in our pocket. It's a great plan. And so the major airlines went after the low-cost airlines. All through that debate, they said, we don't care about general aviation, any part of general aviation. Fly free for all we care. Fly anywhere you want to. This is between the major airlines and Southwest. At that time, general aviation community said, we're concerned about that. We're afraid if they get their way with Southwest, maybe they'll come after us. Well, what ultimately happened in that debate is those airlines fought to a draw. The ticket tax went from 10% to 7.5% plus a segment fee, but Southwest also pointed out that the majors fly internationally and they weren't paying a tax. So they got an international departure tax. In essence, the airlines fought themselves to the largest tax increase in the history of aviation. This time around, the airlines have looked at each other and said, you know, we're not as different as we used to be. The majors have reduced their fares a little bit. Southwest has raised its fares a little bit. Southwest has begun flying longer haul flights, and they all said, you know, maybe there's a way we can all come together and go after general aviation. And that's exactly what their Smart Skies initiative does. And so for the first time, we've seen the user fees are now not just with general aviation as background noise, but with general aviation as the primary target. We're the group that is now under consideration. Now, what they're trying to do as part of that strategy is not go after all of general aviation at once. They're trying to divide and conquer. And that's why it's an honor to be here today with all of general aviation united and together and refusing to be divided. Thanks, Tom.
It is clearly stated the situation and use the term divide and conquer. This isn't just business aviation, it's general aviation, and Phil Boyer, president of AOPA, is going to share more insight as to why all of us should be concerned. Phil?
Well, thank you, Tom, and welcome EAA and AOPA members who I think have a big stake in this fight. Yesterday I was in Florida, and I got a chance, first time, I was sharing it with many of the people on the panel, to debate the equivalent of AOPA's president for the airlines, Jim May, who is the head of the Airline Transport Association, who has pledged this user fee battle. And he spoke for about 35 minutes. And as he started out, in order to disarm me in front of this audience of about 350 people, he said, Phil, Tom, I'm going to declare victory for you today. I would like to announce that we will not seek user fees for general aviation, for piston-powered aircraft. Now, that's my segment of this little topic. I mean, so far you've heard from a manufacturer that does has his feet in both camps, turbine aircraft, piston aircraft. Just yesterday, a great announcement about even extending the end of that piston aircraft. You've heard from the National Business Aviation Association. But really, those of you who are here flying what we can traditionally think of GA, piston-powered airplanes, why do I have a vote in this fight? Why should I care? All be exempted. Well, I like to call it the camel's nose under the tent. Think about it. One segment of aviation has user fees, and another does not. Just like Jim May said yesterday, you're victorious for piston-powered airplanes. And what's happened historically around the world is when it's the airlines in the flight levels, next then it becomes, well, you know, any turbojet operation in the flight levels ought to apply. So it comes down to flight level 180. I'm still okay with my 172 and my WACO. I can fly all I want, pay that fuel tax, and everything's okay. And you might say the same thing. But next then it comes down a little further and it says any airplane flying in the instrument system, because we've got to handle them with air traffic control. We've got to give them separation. We've got to look at them on radar. And then, which happened in many countries, is let's bring it all the way to VFR. Many countries today still exempt a lot of VFR flying from user fees, and you only pay a fuel tax. But, you know, user fees come in different ways, not just that Oshkosh Tower, I'm left downwind for runway 27. You're cleared to land as soon as I can get your MasterCard number and your expiration date. Well, and PIN number, yeah. Well, let me do that here while I'm trying to fly in this busy airspace. And I could go on and on. Safety of flight, I think, is what's really key here. And a lot of people are ignoring this. And once again, The definition of GA, and it is an ICAO, an international definition. It's also a definition that our Secretary of Transportation knows, who said no user fees for general aviation. It's also a definition that the FAA uses for everything, airports, airmen, etc. And its definition is all flying except scheduled airlines and the military. So that's why we all have a leg in this fight. One of my key decisions, Tom, I'm sure you had to go through this. Do we take our exemption here and run for our core member, or do we look ahead to the future? Do we look ahead to aircraft like the one that that Cirrus just announced, turbocharged piston, that will fly up in the flight levels? Whoops, now what happens if it's anything above flight level 180? Or the very light jets, or the single-engine jets, or the single-engine turbine turboprop that might be a conversion someday in the future for our 182s or planes like that. So we can't, at this moment, take this exemption and run. And as Ed said, united we stand, divided we'll fall. GA around the world has not fared well under user fees, and I'm saying that lightly. Today, before I leave to go back to the office, I'm going to get a flight service briefing. How about in France? $1.64 to access flight service and 42 cents a minute. Or you say, well, that's okay, I'll go to the computer. How about 41 cents a minute billed while you're talking on flight service? In Germany, a live briefing, $1.50 a minute. Internet access, well, get away nice here. An annual fee of $105. Use as much as you like. In the UK, the most expensive is that phone call, a consultation fee. They got to have a name for everything over there. Consultation fee of $30 for the call, plus an additional $5.31 if you want special products like the radar map, the winds aloft map, etc. In Austria, 10 minutes, $2.20 a minute. I could go on and on. And in New Zealand, here's a story. They are a country that started up here, airlines only, kept coming down. And 2 years ago, VFR user fees. A pilot had a fatal accident, was alone in his airplane. New Zealand is a few large cities and then nothing. So was out in the hinterlands, crashed. His wife said to the accident investigator when he asked, why didn't he have a flight plan that we might have been able to find where the accident happened rather than weeks later? Because they felt he could have survived the accident, but not being out in the wilderness. And she said, I remember him saying something about last week they instituted charges for a VFR flight plan, so I'm not going to pay it. That's what can happen in situations like this. How about ATC, flying in the airspace, control towers, talking to TRACONs, talking to centers, and airport charges? Don't forget, these are all user fees. In the Netherlands, one of our worst, as a matter of fact, Avgas now, we worry about it here. I saw Tom a truck go with 369, so thank you very much. Avgas, $15 a gallon. Landing, $10, and it's scaled by aircraft and category of airplane, up to $50 for a 172 to land. The private pilot written exam, $1,000. Your medical, $250. I could go on and on. A lot of our attention is turned to the Middle East. We talked to our AOPA folks in Israel. They don't just do an annual inspection on their airplane. This is going the wrong way. They renew their certificate of airworthiness each and every year. Our president over there has a twin Comanche. It's $356 now. The proposal's on the table for $1,974 a year. They have to take a periodic instrument ride if they're just a private pilot, $243. And it's being proposed to go to $649. Want to take a check ride for a private pilot license? $280, proposed to go to $747. You know, we get a lot of letters. Austria is not a wonderful country for general aviation. Third class medical, $260. to fly a practice ILS, $31. To land at the airport after the approach, $70. And folks, I'm talking about piston engine airplanes. Security, we all know that there's security screening at many of the European airports, $12. And that wonderful ride you need, because you can't drive your car at certain airports anymore out to your airplane, that wonderful ride from the FBO to the airplane is $5. In my situation, says our Australian, or Austria AOPA member, it's actually cheaper to fly with a whole family, four tickets by airline to the States, rent an aircraft for about 30 hours, and have a nice two-week vacation, including the cost for hotels and a rental car, than flying the same number of hours in Europe. The cost estimate for flying for 30 hours over there is $7,500. For the trip to the U.S. with his two kids and his wife and all those other things, $7,200. The Italians aren't exempted either. Here's a member that wrote us, I recently returned from my vacation in Italy, where there I visited a GA commercial airport. That's when the issue of user fees came into focus. I was shocked at what I didn't see. I didn't see an active FBO or a flight line full of GA aircraft waiting to take flight. Instead, I saw a padlocked FBO, one older model Cessna, sorry, Jack, that's parts you won't be selling them, and a couple of much older singles that I didn't recognize. Except for the Cessna, they were all in pretty bad shape, and it was obvious they hadn't been flown in years. I asked the only GA pilot mechanic I could find what happened to the Aero Club, where I could buy a sectional chart. He says there's no place to buy those things anymore. It's been abandoned because pilots no longer can afford to fly. And all we have to do in this horrible scenario I'm painting, but is realistic around the world, is look to our neighbor to the north, not too far from here. We have the former head of the Canadian Owners and Pilots Association, Bill Pepler, up here in the front seat, and we have their current president back here in about row five, Kevin Sutka. It all began in the mid-90s. Bill and I, you know, we worked together on this, and I kept saying to you, why do you think we should go along with what they came up with was an exemption in Canada? And that was, well, you know, it's privatized ATC, but they're going to leave general aviation and the smaller, lower-weight airplanes alone. So they had a fuel tax there, a pretty hefty fuel tax, 42 cents a gallon versus our 19 cents. They put a sticker on these lower-weight piston-powered airplanes. Started out, as I recall, at around $60 a year for the typical plane. It's grown, of course, it is now up to $72. And they call them recreational airplanes. If you used your plane for business, and how many of us file an IRS tax return and don't try to figure out every way we can to say, yeah, I hauled some checks one night, so I got to write off this portion of my airplane. Well, if it goes to business, it's a much higher fee. Let me fast forward now to Kevin's reign at COPA, when all of a sudden the ugly user fee that was a sticker plus a fuel tax high enough now turns to all kinds of charges, the worst being if you land at any one of seven airports, you will now pay, regardless of the size, weight of your airplane, a $10 per daily departure, takeoff, touch and go at these airports, up to a maximum of $1,200. They filed with the board that makes up the governance in their parliament to oversee this privatized system, and they recently lost the ruling on user fees. So once again, Kevin, just to quote you for a second, Derek and me, no doubt that the change will encourage pilots to avoid the seven airports in question. And the ruling, I think you feel, may give the airlines now their opportunity to push forward in demanding user fees in other ways, shapes, and forms. All of us, as Ed said, the airlines want to remove Congress from their oversight. Yesterday, big time, the airline representative said, we don't want Congress involved in this stuff. I would maintain that one of the best supporters of this show, this airport, this event, is Congressman Petri from this area in Wisconsin, who has place named certain things, probably. Airport infrastructure, not a bad thing to have. And remember, we're the people who elect that Congress. The board of directors of a privatized system, as Kevin knows, as Bill knows, turns out to be mainly the airlines themselves. It's been that way around the world. There has to be a reason this show, Tom, is so great and so vibrant and so many people. And part of it is because if we take GA in the whole world, business aviation, personal aviation, recreational aviation, etc., two-thirds of all activity and planes take place here in the United States. Why not the other countries? Because they've never been allowed to flourish. Bottom line, what can you do? As you walk away from this seminar, what can you do? Well, there's no bill on the table right now, so there's really nobody to write. And that's good news. Actually, we had a little victory here. They're on a rain delay right now. Marion Blakey, the administrator, had hoped to have a bill ready in February. We waited. And then March, and then April, then in May it wasn't there. And finally, she called several of us on this panel recently and said, you know, we're not going to put the bill in till next year. And Tom, I called her and said, well, now we can invite you to AOPA Expo because I didn't want you in November to talking about your bill in front of my members. But you can do this. A lot of weenie roasts, you know, all, Petri has won, all of the House is up for re-election this November. And there's some tough elections. And a third of the Senate. So when you go to some activity in your community, in your region, and you're at a picnic or whatever, go up and just say, we want to keep you. We as pilots want to keep you in charge of the nation's safest and most efficient system. So next year, if you hear something about an FAA funding bill, just make sure that we keep our present method of funding, fuel taxes, ticket tax, etc. And so use these meetings well and easily. And then stay involved, like those of you who came today to this seminar. Stay involved in this issue. Support organizations like TOMS and AOPA, because those are the organizations that are going to tell you when to write, how to write, who to write, and keep you informed of the activity that's going on here. Thank you very much, Tom.
I hope you start to see the picture that's being painted here and why this is different. Ed Bowen talked about pay less, control more. Pay less, control more. What did Jim May say to Phil yesterday? You basically have a pass, an exemption. You have a victory. Why does Jim feel, as ATA, they have the say in this? In other words, is he the judge and jury? Why does he have the right to say, you're exempted, you win, you lose? They're showing their hand. They want to shift it to general aviation, and it's divide and conquer. They're trying to separate business aviation from the rest of the general aviation community. Keep that in mind as this debate continues on. Next, I'd like to call Alan Klapmeyer, President and CEO of Cirrus Design, to talk about the user fee system and the revenue, and that method of collecting revenue. Alan?
Thanks, Tom. I think these gentlemen have done an excellent job of outlining some of the details that we ought to be worried about. But let me start by talking about this in a slightly different way. This is the greatest aviation event in the world. Everybody should just take a look behind you here. You can probably see a lot of airplanes out that direction. I can't. But if you look behind you, you see a field full of RVs and some long, easy tails sitting up in the back. This is the greatest aviation event in the world because it represents all of aviation. You can find a little bit of everything here. Now, this ongoing user fee debate is very distressing for me, and the reason it is because there is so much disingenuous rhetoric. See how politically correct I can be? Disingenuous. That's better to say. It's more polite than saying dishonest. It's also a little bit better than saying not very smart. The system proposed by the ATA is called Smart Skies, but it doesn't seem very smart. And they talk about modernization, but they don't propose any modernization. It really is, as has been pointed out, an attempt to divide and conquer the rest of aviation so that they can then control the system. And it would, in fact, be a disaster for general aviation. I would actually say it'd be a disaster for all of aviation, but I won't get into whether or not I think they're the most well-managed industry in the world and whether or not we think they could run an air traffic control system even for themselves. But leaving that out, it would be at least a disaster for general aviation. User fees. disingenuous statements, costs. These are the kinds of phrases that we need to think about. One of the things that you will hear from them is that the system works well in other nations. And I think Phil did an excellent job of pointing out some of those costs. I can tell you that from flying in many of those nations, there isn't a single one of them where the system works well. There isn't a single country in the world that can support a show like Oshkosh, that can bring this kind of diversity, this kind of numbers into one place. Imagine the cost of this show with some of the numbers that Phil was throwing out added to the cost of bringing people's airplanes here. So what they're proposing is imposing a broken system from the rest of the world on what is clearly a good system here. Now, what we have here is a very efficient system for collecting costs. And what I really want to make sure that people understand is that this is not about whether or not GA thinks it should pay its fair share. It's about how do we determine what our fair share is. So, for example, the way we collect our costs right now are a very efficient fuel tax. It's virtually invisible. It adds no additional bureaucratic burden from the collection of fees side. And it does, I believe, fairly represent the cost to our system. I basically fly VFR wherever I go. I don't go into large airports. The incremental cost for me in the system really does come pretty close to zero. And I do love the example of the A380 and the costs necessary for that. When I used to be a little bit more involved with airports and would look at some of the modernization costs and the budget, we would see some unbelievable costs going into the air carrier airports, and we would wonder why we couldn't get our taxiway repaired. There is not a system that can be measured on a blip is a blip is a blip process. So this is about how do we properly allocate costs? How do we fairly measure costs? How do we fairly distribute those costs? Now, the obvious systems that we've talked about tend to be about air traffic control, but those costs really do go beyond that. For example, in most nations, the FAA certification, the certification process, not the FAA, whatever it is, EASA or other systems, there is a specific user fee for the certification process. That obviously includes type certificates, certificates for new airplanes, but it includes the STCs that might improve your airplane. It covers the maintenance costs for getting your airplane annual. There's a whole series of user fees. Now let's think about what those do. Think back about the economics that you all took. Costs are obviously a disincentive. What they basically do is remove or add a disincentive to the manufacturers to improve the airplanes. You want to change the safety level of your airplane by adding an STC for some new avionics? There's a cost to that that gets passed on down. And we will degrade the capability of the airplanes and of the pilots, not just the air traffic control system, by layering on these additional costs. But there are other problems. It's not just that these costs are disincentives to doing the right thing. They become part of a bureaucracy that spirals in the wrong direction. You've all heard of the virtuous cycle. How do we bring more people into this industry? How do we distribute the costs over more people? In fact, the user fee system does the opposite. Bill pointed out the pilot that was lost in New Zealand because they didn't want to file a flight plan. Well, let's suppose that 50% of the people don't file the flight plan, something which I would recommend. Now what we've done is said the cost didn't change. There is no change. There's no marginal cost to the offering of the flight plan. All of the costs are still there. We've just got half as many customers to pass them over. Obviously, what will happen is they will double the cost of filing the flight plan. So now let's take that 50% and say 50% of those don't. What happens again? They double the cost of filing the flight plan. It happens in aircraft certification. It happens in the user fee side of operating the air traffic control system. And most importantly, it happens from the base user's point of view in the cost of landing fees and how they use their airplane. So once again, look behind you. We've got a field full of airplanes here. You won't see this anywhere else in the world. If we were in Europe today and we were having a very large fly-in, you might be able to see half that number of airplanes out there if you look behind you, but there'd be no airplanes behind me. They would consider half of the number you can see out there as a large fly-in. They are, through the economics of the system, killing general aviation. Now, this would be a disaster for us, those of us here that participate, but it would also be very bad for the U.S. economy. We add a significant amount to the value of the economy, whether it's business transportation in business jets or personal transportation, people are flying on vacation. General aviation is a vital part of the economy. So, in fact, what is being proposed is a system that's not smart, that doesn't modernize anything, that hurts the economy by penalizing those of us that don't add any cost to the system unfairly. It's a bad deal, and that's why all of us are obviously against it, and we really do need your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Final member of our panel is Pete Bunce, the president and CEO of the General Aviation Manufacturers Association, to highlight why the airlines think we, general aviation, are creating congestion in our safety issue. Pete?
Thanks, Tom. Just this morning, if any of you caught the Today Show, they had an expose on just some of the increased delays that they're seeing across the country. The major airports they mentioned were JFK, Newark, and Atlanta. Now, those don't sound like airports that general aviation uses. And in fact, if there's one takeaway that I'd like you to have from my section of this forum today is the fact that the airlines drive the cost of the system. We've talked about the hub and spoke concept, but I want to break that down just a little bit. Because controllers are paid by the volume and complexity of the traffic that they control. Where do you have the most volume and complexity in the system? That is at certain times during the day when you have major arrivals and departures from your hub airports. That drives major costs within the system. It is not the same to move a GA aircraft from Chicago into New York City that is using reliever airports than it is if you were going from O'Hare to LaGuardia or O'Hare to JFK. There are different costs associated with that. And when you take what the government did after the major congestion delays in the year 2000, they instituted what's called the Operational Evolutionary Plan for the 35 most congested airports in the United States. And they devoted most of their resources to trying to fix congestion problems there. And if you look at those 35 airports, GA accounts for 6% of the operations there. 6%. And then you take a list of the top 20 airports that the airlines have in this nation and compare it to a list of the top 20 airports that GA has. There is not a single common airport within those lists. GA does not use the same airports that the airlines use. GA does not cause congestion in the system. And when you look overall at modernization and the fact that modernization will improve capacity in the system to a finite amount, now you start to get into where does GA play a role. Now, first of all, we are never going to do anything about the thunderstorm that's out there. We are not allowed to fly in the thunderstorms. It is a bad idea for airlines or general aviation to fly in there, and that is a fact of nature that we are not going to change. But general aviation is the first community to say that modernization is part of the mantra of flying. And when you walk around the grounds at this great show, you see what innovation is being brought to flying. We've got enhanced vision systems, synthetic vision systems, that is going to be able to increase capacity. The FAA is looking to a new technology that's basically derived from a data link called ADS-B. That they are going to put out there that's going to allow the FAA to divest themselves from very expensive radars and ultimately from VORs, because we'll be able to use satellite navigation that's coupled with data link to be able to have the FAA have very precise information of where we are. And in turn, we should be able to get information where other aircraft are and good weather data and everything else in the cockpit. But there is a tremendous cost associated with that for us. When we have to equip our aircraft with the technology that's going to save the FAA and the government money, there is going to be a significant cost onto all of us to make the system work. Now, ultimately, when the FAA is able to deploy this system nationwide, we will have some improved capacity, and the FAA is going to be able to save money ultimately because they can divest themselves from that infrastructure. But we need the plan. And there are those in Washington and that are coupling on the bandwagon with what the airlines are pushing for that's saying, well, just give us a bunch of money and we'll figure it out. It's just like saying a home builder's coming to you saying, just give me a stack of money and I'll come up, I'll figure out the plans, and I'll tell you how much it'll cost later. That's not how government works. If we have a user fee system, we're going to create an inefficient bureaucracy. They're going to have a bunch of people working just to be able to send you bills. And those of you that have gotten bills from flying overseas also know it's not itemized. You have no idea when you really amass this set of fees that you got. So creating a bureaucracy to be able to administer user fees before you have a plan to be able to modernize the system is the wrong way to go. If we have a coherent plan, the general aviation, the airlines, industry can buy into that gives us this flight path toward modernizing and building capacity, then we can get to the point of figuring out what the costs are of implementing that system. Because we all know with rulemaking within the FAA, it takes time. So it is not a wall that we're going to come up to that's going to all of a sudden be $1 billion a year to modernize. It is going to be a ramp. And within that ramp in modernization, there's going to have to be rulemaking to allow us to properly equip. But at the end of that ramp, there's going to be cost savings when we can divest from that infrastructure. So modernization is something that general aviation is very supportive of. But give us the plan first, and then we can be able to talk about costs. And user fees are not the right way to get there. Folks, remember, airlines drive the cost of the system, and all that the airlines want to do is they want to pay less and control more. And it's a smugness with which they approach this task. A couple of folks were just down in a forum in Chicago last weekend where they had representatives from United and American talking as if the user fees were a fait accompli, as if there's an arrogance about this that they've already said it's going to happen and you guys are just going to have to take it. And we do have the power to be able to talk to our legislators and say user fees are bad government. This is a bad idea. In Europe, they propose that user fees go toward African development aid. The European Union was considering charging user fees within the system and using it to fund development aid. And if they start to impose a user fee system on you, it's not going to be a lockbox. We all know lockboxes don't exist in the government. It's going to go into the general treasury. And if you take the U.S. Patent Office that charges user fees, a user fee if you want to apply for a patent, right now they can't get out enough money for operations, even though it's minuscule in the amount and compared to what they get in, because the money goes to the general treasury and they can't get it back out again. And that's exactly how it would work if they impose user fees on us. So just remember, user fees are bad government, and the airlines drive the cost of the system. And the last point to support that is I want you all to think about what happened at Washington Reagan International when all of a sudden GA was banned from that airport. And with the rules that are in place right now, it's not a whole lot better, but in the 3 years that was totally banned from Washington Reagan National, there was not a bit of savings within the FAA and within the structure of Potomac Control within the Washington area. Not one bit, because we are not the cost drivers in the system. The airlines are. Thank you.
Before we open this for questions and answers, I'd like to leave a few concluding thoughts with you. First of all, EA is pleased at AirVenture to host this opening salvo in terms of establishing our united front as a general aviation community. I'd like to remind you that the airlines are the ones that have made this a public debate, a public fight. They've attacked publicly through the media the general aviation community, and we have to respond. This right now is going to be a battle primarily with the airlines that will escalate as time goes on. What can you do? Each of us who have friends who work in the airline community, I have a number of people in management positions who have established the one thing that the airlines are afraid of is the general aviation community and the power you have to get out the vote. They don't have that power. They may lobby, but they can't get out the vote. So when it's time, AOPA, EAA, and others will ask you to contact your legislators. As Phil said, this is an election year. It doesn't hurt to contact in advance. Votes count. Constituents count. We need to be united in this thing. Again, I want to remind you on the definition of general aviation. It's been highlighted time and time again. It's not business aviation and general aviation. It's the entire community. As evidenced by this panel, we stand here united to send a strong message. In conclusion, you've heard it a number of times. The airlines have brought their argument down to a simple phrase, a blip is a blip. Well, ours is a simple phrase also, pay less to control more, doesn't bode well for the aviation community and for the future of this transportation system. What we're doing right now is distributing a summary document of some of the comments you've heard today, focusing on the position of the general aviation community in its entirety. Please take it with you, review it, share it, spread it around. We ask the media to do the same. With that, we'll open up to any questions that you may have. A question over here, and I'll repeat the question.
Thanks, Tom. My name is Bill Shen. I'm an EAA member. I'm an ALPA member. I own a Cessna 210 that I use for business, and I fly on the airlines considerably. And I think the thing has totally got me confused. And several of you mentioned today cost shifting from the airlines to GA. Well, I was always of the understanding I put in the bill no matter what. If I'm buying a Delta ticket, I'm paying a ticket tax. If I'm flying my airplane, I'm paying a fuel tax. So bottom line, I pay it either way. So it's always been my understanding the airlines really pay nothing, or maybe it was minuscule, into the trust fund to start with. So where is this cost shifting coming from?
Okay, the question related to the cost shifting, what the airlines were doing. I'm going to turn this over to Ed Bowen, if you could kind of repeat the question.
Well, I think the question that was raised is how can the airlines shift their tax burden since their tax burden is being borne by their passengers? It's a passenger ticket tax. Now, what the airlines say is they've got very sophisticated pricing models, and they will price their tickets to the maximum all-in cost a passenger will pay. So they may say that the most a person will pay to fly between two points is $200 all-in. Now, it doesn't matter if part of that is taxes or part of it's fees or part of it's whatever. They're only going to pay $200, and that's it. They stop flying. Now, the airlines say if we have to pay $25 or $50 in taxes, if we have to take that from our passengers, well, that's money that goes to the government. If it didn't have to go to the government, it would stay in our pocket. So what they're talking about is taking the same amount of money. No one should ever think that they're talking about passengers getting reduced fares or passengers having a less burden to fly between two points. They will charge the maximum a burden that they think that you will pay. The question is, how much of it do they get to keep in their pockets? And the reason you know that this is true is that we had the ticket tax expire in 1996. There was a five-month period when the taxes didn't exist. The airlines, not one of them, reduced their fares. They kept the money, and when the fares were reimposed, they didn't send it back to you. They put it in their pocket. This is about their profitability.
Thank you. This is a real threat. We have 110% of our support. We've got to solve this.
Next question. Could you go over here and ask the question so everybody can hear it over the system?
I think in one way we've lost the battle, and so has the Air Transport Association, in that they've got the airlines fighting with GA when the real issue is that the FAA is a monopoly that costs way more than it needs to provide what we need to get across country in our airplanes. So if we get involved in this battle with the airlines, then the FAA monopoly, sort of like the old postal system used to be before it was allowed to ship a private letter by means other than the postal service, they've got this great monopoly that they can write their own bills for, you know, what they need to, and they've got us battling about who's going to pay it rather than is it even worth paying for. I'd encourage you all to take that bigger picture view while you're battling with the airline to say maybe the question is bigger. Maybe it's with a government monopoly.
Phil Bourne has a comment.
I think in this short discussion, which I thought was very structured, none of us stepped on each other, et cetera, we certainly overlook a lot of what's going on and don't think that that isn't going on. Actually, yesterday it was Jim May who was trying to continue to turn to me and tell where we're all in agreement. We do agree with the airlines, and we do agree with what you're saying, all of us at the table. Is there a way to do business in building airplanes, in certifying airplanes, in flying in the system, in getting flight service briefings, in getting control tower conversations? Very definitely. And the airlines, May himself and some of us, are very involved in working those cost savings out. There's probably an estimated, right now, $2 billion possibly of savings per year in making this system more efficient. And you can be assured, while we didn't go into great detail here, but I thought the talk about ADS-B, where we can dismantle a lot of expensive radars, contract towers, you've probably heard about that, towers that are operated by contract personnel that are all full-fledged controllers but cost far less. The current flight service station system that we pushed and we said you better support this in preparation for this battle was for that reason. $2.2 billion in savings over the next 10 years. So it is very, very much on our minds, and we participate. And there is some common ground here. The problem is it's hard to get the FAA. The FAA loves this little fight because they can stay out of it, and we're bringing them back to the table at this.
Just to follow up on the basic economic point of monopolies, monopolies obviously cause a problem, and as long as the government's a monopoly, you've got a little bit of a problem. But the only thing worse than a government monopoly is a private monopoly. So the only way to make the system more efficient in terms of economic forces is competition, which is what we're also trying to do with the FAA from a delegation point of view. If we can get the FAA to more quickly move towards increased delegation, where, from a manufacturing point of view, we choose to hire one DER versus or one. We put our own costs on it, whether it's DERs or whatever, however the system ends up. Now it's competitive, and we can get to lower costs as opposed to the user fee system, which in Europe is still, or even where they pretend it's privatized, it's still a monopoly, and they get to impose whatever fees they want based upon their costs. There is no incentive to save cost in that system. So monopoly is a problem, but it's better to have it be government than somebody else.
I'd like to add a couple things. When you look at our system, you can't argue with the fact we've got the safest, most efficient system in the world. And you look at any controller that you talk to out there, they're proud of what they do, and if you give them better technology, they'll do everything they can. If we do get ADS-B implemented, they will be able to control traffic with more precision, and they're excited about getting that technology. When you talk to folks within the FAA about user fees, and Alan was just talking about the certification branch, but you talk to folks all across the board, the great folks that work within the FAA, they don't want to see user fees because it blurs that line between the safety regulator and those that are operating. And we've got a system that works today. And that old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, the FAA has been talking about trust fund balances diminishing and everything. Well, we're in a recovery, and the balances are starting to sit there and far exceed the projections that the administration had for the trust fund. So it is becoming healthy. One of the things I worried about is there was an airline executive that was quoted the other day as saying, well, we don't want to just be profitable. We want to be prosperous. And that's why we want this user fee system imposed. And you're sitting there going, yeah, that's really what the essence of all this is. Shift the cost onto the other guy.
Any other questions? Would you come up, please, to state your question?
I'm Lou Myers. I belong to all of your organizations, too. But has anybody put a pencil to this in terms of if it goes on the turbine airplanes, how does that $2 billion is beyond comprehension for me. How much do we put in now? Does it increase our tax 10%, 50%, 300%? Could you tell me about how that works?
Just an order of magnitude type question. I think the general aviation community collectively, and this includes fractional, charter, and so forth, pays around $500 million. They're talking about an additional $2 billion. But let me break that down a little bit more, because they're talking about this initially being just on turbine airplanes. Now, if you take $2 billion and divide it by the number of turbine-powered airplanes in the United States, you're talking well over $100,000 per airplane per year. Think about it.
Does that metric get your attention? We've got time for one more question. We'll take two more questions, you and then we'll wrap it up.
Thanks, Tom. You can see by the number of empty seats here today, we've got a lot to do in terms of motivating the general aviation public in terms of the seriousness of this fight. Having said that, the ATA has characterized the fight in kind of pithy little sound bites. A blip is a blip. They personalized it by going after the CEO of ExxonMobil and his G5, comparing that to, you know, 747 going from New York to California. How do you combat that with the general public in terms, because the ATA is characterized in ways that the general public can understand. They can understand a blip is a blip. They can understand a CEO flying across the country. So how do you combat that public relations campaign that ATA is very effectively waging?
I'll start, but I still think it gets down to the grassroots of all of us in the industry and all of us that participate in the system contacting our local legislators, whether it be at the local level, whether it be at the state level or national level. We have to make sure that they understand that it's not the CEO of ExxonMobil. It's the guy that, you know, I talked to yesterday that bought a used 206 that lives in Kansas, and he has a hospice infrastructure that he manages. It's in Oklahoma. It's in Texas. He just learned to fly. He's going to use that airplane so that he can more effectively get to those places. This isn't an ExxonMobil CEO. This is a guy that has a grassroots business that's using general aviation for his business. And those are the people that are going to get severely impacted with user fees.
I think the way we're trying to fight sound bites is with real information, with real facts. What's really at stake here is the airlines want to pay less and control more. They want to have a rate-setting board that has the power to tax you. They don't want your elected official who's got to stand before you and ask for your vote every 2 or 6 years to have that authority. They want it themselves. They want to use this idea to promote the idea of another bailout for the airlines. This is about control of the system. It's not about blips, and that's what we've got to make people understand.
I think we have to keep in mind, we are the general public in the eyes of our elected officials. Our vote is just as important as anybody else's vote. And that's where the airlines are afraid, because they don't have the votes, because their customers aren't going to see any savings, so it's not going to impact them. And we have to ask ourselves the question, have they proven in the past that they're in a position to control and run a business effectively? That's been stated here. So how do we combat sound bites? This is more than sound bites, but there's a pretty effective one. Pay less, control more, and to the general public, do you get any of those savings back? And force the airlines to say it. If they're willing to stand up and say every dollar saved in ticket tax goes back to the passenger, that'd be a major breakthrough.
And I can tell you that we just had our recent meeting in Europe where I sat with the shops and said, how is this impacting you? A data package for a Garmin 430 VFR installation is $2,500. That's your field approval. That's having a DER develop the data. That's having EASA produce the paperwork. That's the cost. But could somebody talk about the effect on maintenance? Is this an ops issue? Is this an entire user fee issue for the entire FAA? Is flight standards involved? How is this playing into the funding of the overall FAA, or is it about air traffic control?
I think we have to keep in mind, FAA has not made a presentation yet. So to address that, right now our enemy is ATA. They've made this a public issue. Overall, what opposed to user fees has been highlighted here today. As Phil said, the camel's nose under the tent. It isn't just for aircraft operations. It can go the entire gamut. You know, user fees can spread quickly once they're established. And you need to nip it in the bud. That's what we're here today to talk about with the United Front. There's a lot of details. There's going to be a lot of rhetoric. There's going to be a lot of arguing and a lot of debate. But we have to stand united. And your votes, your contacts are going to make a difference. Yes, we as associations and companies can lobby, debate, and represent your interests. But at the end of the day, what's going to make the real difference is when we're asked you to respond is to get out the vote. Working 3A chapters, individual AA members, AOPA members, the media and the press, the owners and operators of various production aircraft, home built, etc. It has to be a united front. And today we're establishing that we're all united, as evidenced by the people here. And I hope you walk away with that visual message, because this can spread quickly, as evidenced by the tens of hundreds of examples that have been given of what user fees have done in countries already. And what's to say it's going to be any different here than it's been in every other country listed? So with that, we'll conclude. If the media has any questions, we're happy to meet with you outside for a few minutes after. I thank you for being a part of this activity and this program, and we ask for your vote and your contact when it's time to address your legislators and to respond to our request for your action in the field. Thank you.